Misfits. Welcome to episode 7 of the Misfit Book Club. This month we're reading Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud by Anne Helen Peterson. We're going to start this episode off with a little bit of book news before introducing you to our queen, Anne Helen, and talking about her history as an academic and as a writer at BuzzFeed. Then we're going to jump into feminism. That's right, this episode is going to be full of the F word. So bust out that nasty woman t-shirt, slap on your pussy hat, and let's get this party started. Hi, this is Maria Blackheart, and welcome to the Misfit Book Club, a podcast for readers, weirdos, blue stockings, normals, scribbling women, madmen, loons, screwballs, and every type of bookish person in between. This is episode 7, and I'm joined by my co-host, Pixie Brooker.
Hey, slut! Just kidding!
I mean, I'll own that label.
Oh, come on. I just thought it was an appropriate greeting considering our subject matter for today.
Yeah, this episode is definitely going to have to get an explicit tag just by virtue of the title of the book we're reading.
Yeah, we'll probably drop some words here and there.
So how was your week, Pixie?
I think it's been kind of slow here the last couple of weeks. We had Halloween, you know.
That's fun.
It was fun. It was a little anticlimactic here at my new house. I think I had like 3 trick-or-treaters. You know, but I have been watching Stranger Things, so that's fun. If you're watching that and you want to hit me up on Twitter, do it. And we did get some indictment news this week. That was kind of exciting.
Indictment Monday.
Yay! Can't wait to see how everything falls apart. It's fun. We look for joy where we can get it, right?
Yes, I feel like I'm just like waiting for all the cookies to start crumbling, because this strikes me as like the first round of indictments, because I think they think Paul Manafort is gonna just like
spill his guts. Yeah, spill his guts. Yeah, I can't wait to see John Jr. get in trouble. That guy is the worst. And I did some serious trolling of him on Twitter this week. But I think you're right. I think there will be some more stuff to happen, and it's just going to be entertaining and surprising.
Don Jr., it looks like you could grease a pan with his face, doesn't it?
He is so disgusting.
He's so slimy.
He can't spell. He doesn't seem to have a brain in his head. It is disturbing. But yes, yeah, so it's been a slow week for me. Book news wise, it's like book award season. We've got the National Book Awards coming up in a couple of weeks. And I've been really excited about this set of books because one of our books for this podcast, The Hate U Give, was nominated for a National Book Award in the YA category. And it didn't make the short list. It was on the long list, but there are a handful of really, really, really good books in all the categories. And I'm looking forward to see who wins. I think the date for those awards is November 15th.
Lisa Lucas, who runs the National Book Awards, is amazing. I love following her on Twitter. She's always recommending really good books. I just really like her.
I have a bit of a girl crush on Lisa Lucas. You should definitely follow her on Twitter if you don't already.
Lisa Lucas, Anne Helen Peterson, we will get into this in a second. Liberty Hardy, mm-hmm. who I'm trying to make her our best friend through this podcast. That's like my number one goal. Not a stalker. Mostly.
We basically just love bookish people, so that's why we're here. How about you, Maria? What's going on?
This last couple weeks was not great. It's not the worst 2 weeks I've ever had in my whole life, but it's probably in the top 10. Mm-hmm. But the one shining moment is I discovered bookoutlet.com. One of the people we follow on Instagram had posted something about it on their Instagram story. And I was like, wow, that website combines my two favorite things, books and outlet shopping. Mm-hmm. So this can't possibly be bad. So before I knew it, I had like 30 books in my shopping cart. Basically, Book Outlet sells damaged and remaindered copies of books. This isn't like crappy books. They're like bestsellers, like... there are a bunch of really great YA titles. I spent $35 to get the free shipping because, of course, I did. But I think I ended up buying like 12 or 13 books.
That's amazing. If you guys don't know what remaindered means, basically books that are brand new aren't going to be on this website, but books, say, that went to an independent bookstore and then didn't get sold will get shipped back to the publisher. And then the publisher, if the books are in good enough condition, will try to sell them to somebody like Book Outlet, where they'll sell them for a really discounted rate, and then Book Outlet can sell it to you for a discounted rate, and you get a pretty good deal. But it's the same exact book as stuff that people are buying in Barnes & Noble or wherever.
I think the only difference is they will have a mark on the side of the book, like a pin mark, to indicate that they're remaindered, but you'll never see it. So this is going to be very dangerous for me. Someone is going to have to be my accountability partner.
Well, it's not me. You know, I'm a terrible influence, especially when it comes to buying books. I'm like, yes, you need it. I'm an encourager.
You are. More book news, book to movie news, as promised. It was just announced today or yesterday that The Paper Bag Princess, which is a children's book by Robert Munch, I think is his last name, is going to be made into a movie that's going to be directed by Elizabeth Banks, which is really exciting. So The Paper Bag Princess has sold like 10 million copies, hugely popular, and it's about a princess who saves her prince charming.
I love Elizabeth Banks. I'm looking forward to seeing what she does.
She's great in everything, even those weird apartment commercials that she's in.
Realtor.com. They are somehow entertaining.
So that's coming out. And also they just announced that The Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison is going to become a movie. And that book is kind of intense. So I'll be interested to see how they're going to adapt that.
Right.
Oh, and my last bit of book news is that the Goodreads Awards have gone live. Pixie, do you do the Goodreads Awards? Do you vote?
I do. It's so fun to vote. And so many of the times I'm voting for books I haven't read because there's so many categories. But it's really fun to see what readers have enjoyed for the past year.
I was going to ask you, true confession style, if you vote in categories for books that you haven't read.
Oh, yeah. You know I have an opinion on everything, even though I have nothing to back it up with.
I do it too. You should have seen me vote with abandon in the poetry category.
Ooh, I think they expect that some of that happens. So anyway, good luck to all of the contestants in the Goodreads Awards. Well, I just wanted to say to our listeners, I have loved our Jurassic Park conversation so much. I'm almost sad. I'm sad that it's over, to be perfectly honest. Though I'm looking forward to future conversations. I just love talking to everybody about Jurassic Park. Thank you guys for your comments and for interacting with us. It was so much fun.
It really was. We'll have to figure out a way to continue on with it. Maybe we could do like a riff tracks for the movie.
That would be super funny.
Tell us if you guys want that. If you'd be interested in that. Not like as an actual episode, but as like a bonus.
So this week I was watching the Steven Spielberg episode of American Masters, the documentary, and I did not know this and I didn't put this together, but both Schindler's List and Jurassic Park came out as movies in 1993. So talk about an insane year for Steven Spielberg. I know the transition between Schindler's List and Jurassic Park in the movie was not exactly smooth, or in the documentary. Let's just say it's kind of hard to go from one to the next, but one thing that I didn't really think about, I guess, back in 1993 and now today, is that when he decided to make this movie, he was insistent that the dinosaurs in the movie run. And there just wasn't technology for that. So basically, Jurassic Park is the first movie that had that sort of really incredible computer animation that we just totally take for granted today. And, you know, I guess it was the first time we'd ever seen anything like that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we talked about this a little bit on the podcast, but I also read an article that talked about how Jurassic Park basically changed the way everybody pictures dinosaurs. There was that line in the book from the geneticist who said, people don't want real dinosaurs. They want the dinosaurs that they have in their heads. And that's kind of what happened on screen. Like, now we know that dinosaurs don't roar. They have feathers, all of these things. But if you were to put that dinosaur in the next Jurassic Park movie, no one would take it seriously. Like, we want the dinosaurs to look like Steven Spielberg's dinosaurs, full stop.
Right. Anything less would be a disappointment.
Absolutely. I mean, the Indominus Rex was already a disappointment. Sorry. Just going to call it like it is.
That is fair.
So we did ask our fellow misfits one other question to wrap up Jurassic Park, because last time we were talking about whether we thought the movie was campy or not, and we sort of like waffled all over the place, right? But we thought that would be a really good question to ask our listeners, so we did, and we got some good responses, I thought.
Yeah. Georgie in her book said, "Ooh, it's a total classic. It is for me anyway. I can see why people may find it campy. My partner thinks it's quite campy, cheesy, as he says. Either way, he still loves the book and film, so it's still a winner. The story is too interesting and too, OMG, this could actually maybe somehow happen for it not to be a classic."
I hear that, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm not convinced that there aren't dinosaurs on some island in the Caribbean. It felt like it really could be a thing.
Absolutely.
At 799 Books said, "I don't think the first movie was campy, but the rest were 100% grass-fed, free-range, organic camp."
I love it.
Girl, you got away with words. So, and then at ARH Forrester said, "I liked the first one, but then it went all, and then it's just a gif of Colin Mockery from Whose Line Is It Anyway? Running away from a giant lizard."
So good. Just a note to 799 Books and ARH Forrester, I think you guys are best friends now. Just saying.
It's official.
Just calling it like I see it. But yeah, guys, thank you for that conversation. It's fun. It doesn't have to end. It's not like we forget these books. We can keep talking about them on Twitter, mm-hmm. Goodreads, wherever. So
yay. And it was so fun. We'll have to make sure to throw in those kind of books.
Yeah.
Like ones that give you really, really good conversation, even if they're not super great.
Yeah.
So I can't wait till we do a romance. This is not a transition. This is just me totally jumping off the rails. So when I have really, really bad weeks, I turn to comfort reads. And so this last 2 weeks was just horrible. And so I picked up a romance novel. That's one of the things I like to read when I'm down, because they deliver, right? They're going to have a happy ending. And I read a book by Sarah McLean, who I actually really like as a writer. She's great.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it was very steamy. And I was like, man, I want to read one of these on the podcast.
We're going to talk about it. We will read them on the podcast.
Good.
It's not immediately, but soon. Yeah. I like that romance novels, science fiction novels, they all serve a purpose, right? They're entertainment mm-hmm. for us. And there's nothing to apologize about entertainment. We can read books for different reasons. It doesn't have to just be for intellectual enlightenment. We read books to have a good time. I think that's worth saying in light of Helen Peterson, who we're talking about today, and kind of her stance on literature and how there are mm-hmm. many different ways to study it, to talk about it, and to appreciate it.
I am so excited to get started with this book, Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman by Anne Helen Peterson. This was one of the books that actually made us want to start our podcast.
Yeah.
Like, man, this would be so great to talk about with other people, but we're hermits. So how are we going to do that?
Whoops. So yeah, that is definitely one of the reasons why we picked this book. I mean, the title obviously appealed to me because you and I are a couple of unruly women. We make people mad on the regular, either on purpose or not.
We speak our minds.
That's right. And that is unruly. That is not allowed sometimes to just say what mm-hmm. you think. So that's one reason we chose this book. Another reason is that we love Anne Helen Peterson for a lot of reasons. One being that just like us, she went and got a PhD, found a lot of subjects really interesting that weren't necessarily PhD level appropriate, I guess.
Yeah.
And then,
so dumb.
I know. And then kind of figured out that she didn't necessarily fit into this box of academia. And so she left. And mm-hmm. she was writing for this website called The Hairpin and was writing some really interesting stuff, a lot about celebrity culture. And then just decided to leave academia altogether and go work for BuzzFeed.
That is the dream.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we should stop right here and say, you know, we're going to talk a lot about academia in this episode, especially because Anne Helen Peterson is so closely tied to it. But when we talk about academia, we are talking about thinkers and professors who occupy colleges all across the U.S. and all across the world. It's a very, very traditional community of people that they're really, I don't know what I'm trying to say. What am I trying to say, Pixie?
It's a place that's really freeing in a lot of ways, but can also be really restrictive in terms of ideas, which is frustrating because part of the whole tenure system in academia, being able to kind of publish what you believe and not be penalized for it, it doesn't really matter because there are still all these unwritten rules about like what's allowed, what's acceptable, what people are allowed to be interested in. And Anne Helen is coming from a lot of these, she writes a lot of her articles from this angle of cultural studies because she's interested in pop culture and things that society at large is really interested in. And that's the kind of thing that Maria and I are interested in too, right? But in academia, sometimes there's this stigma against that kind of intellectualism because it's seen as not necessarily good enough for study.
Which is ridiculous, right? Like, we should be interested in the things that everybody's interested in because it tells us something about our culture, our society, ourselves, but it ends up getting poo-pooed a lot. And you're not seen as a real academic if you are working on that kind of stuff.
Right. And there should be room for everything in academia. There ought to be room for you to study Hamlet, okay? And then also write about Kim Kardashian if you want to. There is stuff to be learned in all of these arenas. But what Anne Helen was discovering is she felt like she wasn't really fitting into any of those kind of prescribed areas of academia. Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like that?
I mean, yes, in a way, yes, I did kind of feel like that.
I did, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, just think about the conversations we're having on this podcast. You know, we're talking about young adult literature. We're talking about science fiction literature. These are not the kind of books that most of the time we would be studying. The Handmaid's Tale, maybe, because that's part of that canon, right? That accepted...
It's good enough.
Yeah, that accepted set of books that are considered good enough and worthy of our time. But you and I don't really fit into that mold. We're more interested in all sorts of literature, all sorts of books.
Yes. Like my romance novel, Benders.
Right.
Months at a time, only romance novels. Which I'm probably about to go on one, so y'all better be ready on Instagram.
I love it. So Anne Helen Peterson, she works for BuzzFeed, as I mentioned. She's a features editor. She recently moved to Montana. She writes a lot about celebrity culture, but she's also been writing about other things lately that are pretty interesting. She got some good articles coming out, or she has some stuff that she's written about like Montana politics that is surprisingly thoughtful and interesting, even though most people would say that's not relevant to me. Montana politics, right? She's really great on social media. She is on Twitter all the time, and she, I guess, moved to Montana and has this dog, and she posts wonderful dog pictures on Instagram.
Her dog is so cute.
No.
Her dog might be cuter than my dog. Don't tell my dog I said that.
I won't. I swear I won't.
But yeah, Anne Helen is super great. And we have sort of a soul connection with her because she was an academic. And then she was like, she noped out. Both Pixie and I did exactly the same thing.
Several years ago, before I had quit, or she published this interview talking about her decision to leave academia, she'd been in it for almost 10 years. And in this interview, she basically said, listen, there's no niche for me. The job market sucks for academics. Most academic writing, the kind of stuff we're expected to do, is really boring and nobody reads it. And that is I know it's true. Nobody wants to admit it, but it is true. And then I cut this little paragraph out of this interview that she did because it really, really resonated with me. And it said a lot of the things at the time that no one was willing to say yet, but is absolutely on point. So here it is. When the interview asked her, you know, if she had a funded degree, meaning did she have a scholarship, did she have assistantships that were paying for her academic work, she says, "Fully funded is a myth, especially at state schools, even state Ivies like the University of Texas. You have a salary, but that salary just about pays your rent, and then you get nickeled and dimed for all sorts of fees, insurance, buying food that's not rice, and somehow surviving the summer." Insurance. God, seriously, Anne Helen. "When you're not getting paid, but are expected to do scholarship and research. Don't go to grad school, kids. The system is broken. There's no other way to put it. There are too many PhDs, which the schools need, because there's such incredibly cheap labor and very, very few jobs. Even if you do everything right, get amazing evaluations, publish your ass off, go to a billion conferences, network like crazy, work with the top scholars in your field, it can still yield nothing." Which is extremely depressing, but also absolutely true.
Like, it makes you say to your stomach how true that is. If there are listeners out there that are thinking about going to grad school for English or for anything else, we don't want to dissuade you, but the situation is grim. There's really no other way to put it.
I think this conversation definitely applies to the humanities most, right?
Yeah.
Because the universities are set up now so that they have a lot of graduate students who can teach their undergraduate students. Mm-hmm. And so it is incredibly cheap labor. And then at the end of your degree, there are just not enough jobs available for people. And everyone's super educated. They want to be a professor. They want to work in the university, but the jobs just don't exist. So it can be a pretty depressing situation. Not to mention, just generally speaking, the department we came out of was kind of depressing.
Oh, God. So let's talk about how much you get paid in grad school. Pixie and I were both on quote-unquote fully funded degrees, and that means that we had teaching assistantships, so we taught, like, Composition 1 and would get paid. I think at the time it was, like, $11,000 a year, and then basically not have to pay to enroll in classes. But what they don't tell you is that that does not cover fees from the university. Tough luck. Go sell a kidney. It doesn't cover insurance, and they discourage you from getting other jobs. So, like, if you're a teaching assistant, like, that's your job.
Right. And you got to pay for books.
Yep. I would literally fight people over library copies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the minute the syllabus came out, I was, like, putting shit on hold.
Dibs. And then you punch somebody in the face when they tried to get it from you. So the quality of life in terms of money is small. But, you know, when graduate students begin, they think, oh, this is just temporary, right? It's just for a short period of time. Eventually, I'll get out of here and I'll get a well-paying job. I'll pay off my loans and my life will be great. But problem is that's not usually how it happens. Most people, if they do finish their PhD, they have a hard time finding a job. Marie and I are not people that care only about money. And
oh God,
I think we're also people who care a lot about education and feel very strongly that it's important. But higher education in the humanities is in a real mess. And people don't seem to talk about it enough. They act like it's this idealistic place where wonderful things are happening. And there are good things happening. But a lot of bad shit is happening too.
I mean, people who leave, there's a lot of shame and stigma in saying, hey, I don't want this. I want something else.
Right.
And so that's why Anne Helen's so great, is because she's like, you can't shame me. This is great. And it is great. She's doing great stuff.
She is. She's a smart woman. She has transferable skills. And so what I love about her is that she has proven that there are ways for people to be public intellectuals that don't have anything to do with academia. There are places on the internet where people will read some really highly interesting and very well-researched stories, and you can get paid for it. It can be an actual job for you. So that's kind of my love letter to Anne Helen.
She is one of our mini queens. And so this book was sort of a no-brainer pick for us, both content-wise and because of Anne Helen's story.
I think her subject matter and the way she writes about what some might consider low subjects, but with brains, fits really well into kind of what you and I are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, we aren't snoots about stuff. We want to write about or talk about things that are interesting to a lot of people, including us. And yeah. No subject is too, like, mainstream or too, I don't know, grocery store novel for us. Like, we'll read anything and have fun talking about it.
The number of books I pick up off the checkout line because of the cover is too damn high. So I'm just like, oh, look, there's a woman on it. Mm-hmm. She has a beautiful dress on. She's looking out over the Scottish Highlands. I must read this.
There's nothing wrong with that, Maria. Nothing
we are
all.
Not precious about no. What we read.
Not at all.
And we're better people for it.
I think so. I think we're more rounded, well-rounded because of that. Sure. So have you started the book yet?
I have. I'm not very far into it. So I've read the introduction and the first 2.5 chapters. So the chapter on Serena Williams, the chapter on Melissa McCarthy, and I'm halfway through the chapter on Broad City.
So good. So good. That's kind of where I am too. A little bit behind you. But yes, so far it's really good. I'm not sure if any of you guys have read it or if you're reading along with us this month, but the first section of the book, the prologue, we meet Anne Helen in the press room on election night 2016, which as I was reading, I was like, too soon. It's too soon for me to talk about this. But basically how she'd spent the day being joyful about voting for America's first woman president. And then sitting there that night as everyone was panicking, shocked, and then she realized she had to write about it.
That's how I felt. Oh, it's one of those things where I think 20 years from now, we're going to be like, where were you that night? I remember this because we were texting back and forth trying mm-hmm. to keep our spirits up. And then finally, you could see the writing on the wall. I think Martha Raddick on ABC had already started crying on air. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try and go get some sleep. And you texted me, I would say around midnight. No, you called me.
Yeah, I think I called you.
You did call me. Mm-hmm. And we just started crying on the phone together, both of us.
Yep.
It was just too much. It was too much. And we were so hopeful
mm-hmm.
for a female president. We were hopeful for our country. And it didn't work out the way we wanted to, but it was a body blow
mm-hmm.
in a really specific kind of way. And so I will never forget just crying on the phone for like 20 minutes together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely, it was a horrible night, and I'll remember it forever. But, you know, the thing that I walked away from that night knowing for sure, and this is something that Anne Helen says, is that that night was proof to me that America hates women. And it especially hates women who don't fit this typical kind of tidy, well-mannered, beautiful, small, well-behaved box. Those women, America hates them. And it wasn't so much that like a woman lost the election, but that the smartest, most capable woman in America lost to an orange monster.
HR puffin stuff.
I won't get over that for the rest of my life. And you can call me a liberal snowflake. I don't care. That's absolutely what I am. But I will not get over that. I'm just telling you right now.
It's deeply frustrating. And Anne Helen points this out in her introduction because it's almost like the rug got pulled out from under you. Like now looking back, I can say, you know, Maria, Lord, what did you think was going to happen here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at the time it felt very, very hopeful. And so Anne Helen in her introduction is us. So, but this is an important conversation to have. And I think, you know, we know that all of the people listening to this podcast aren't going to have the same political leanings as we do. And sometimes you and I don't even agree on political issues.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, we're both incredibly feminist women. And this is a book that we think is important. you know, we are open and willing to have conversations with you guys. And absolutely, we're open-minded. So we're ready to have these conversations. And I know that this book is going to change the way I think about things sometimes, because it already has. This book is going to be great. I think it's going to be wonderful.
I agree. So every chapter is about a different female celebrity. And each chapter is titled to something. So, for example, the first chapter is Serena Williams, Too Strong. The Melissa McCarthy chapter is Melissa McCarthy, Too Fat. And every chapter kind of breaks down these individuals in terms of the ways that they transgress societal norms, the things that they do that tend to interest people, but then also tend to turn them off. Right. So It's a fascinating look at societal norms in general. Like, why do certain women tend to fly under the radar, whereas other ones tend to get all of our attention? And why are they getting our attention? And is it for something good? Is it for something that has neutral value? Or are we just kind of programmed to think that women have and should be very specific types of people?
And how big is that box?
You know? Right.
Like, yeah, it seems to me that the perfect woman box is very, very small and occupied by mostly mommy bloggers, like from what I can tell.
Pretty mommy bloggers.
Think about mommy bloggers for a second. No hate if you're a mommy blogger. You do you. But you scroll through the feed and they've got like four beautiful children who are always clean and smiling at the camera. They have these huge kitchens that are like chic and organized and white. And then they'll do a post that's like, this is what I look like in the morning, but the lighting is still beautiful. And even without makeup, they're like gorgeous. And their hair is like just tousled enough to make you think that like maybe she just woke up, or maybe she's had her hair set in curlers for like 5 hours and just like perfectly done. And she's like, this is the reality, me in sweatpants. And it's like, girlfriend, mm-mm. No, you know, and that seems to be the box where we're comfortable with women being. And the minute that you step out, it is
to something.
And here's the other thing, and I'm going to put on my I majored in 19th century literature hat for just a second.
but
this is not new.
No.
Anne Helen's talking about it in relationship to modern celebrities, but this idea of women being too much is as old as society itself, really. Mm-hmm. In the 19th century, when it was most damning if you were labeled too hysterical. Women were written off left and right for being quote unquote hysterical, but really all they wanted was to like vote.
Yep.
And that's, you know, the 19th century, but you can keep going back and back and see the ways that women are marginalized by being too much. I mean, what are the witch trials if not women being too powerful?
Right. Yeah, too loud, too something, always. Yeah, in the 19th century, hysteria, they believed, was when your womb got out of control. When your uterus literally detached from the rest of you and just went roaming around the rest of your body and made you crazy. That is what they believed.
Although, once a month, it sort of feels like that, but
pretty sure your uterus stays put. Like, it's not a goblin.
We are not that kind of doctors. You can't prove that. No, I'm just kidding.
But no, yeah, those are perfect examples of just points in time where women in particular transgressed, where they were too something too much and they riled up communities.
Yeah. I mean, suffragettes, too much. It's like, they're wearing pants. Burn them at the stake. Listen, I will lead a protest that says all dresses should have pockets. But it's that sort of stuff, right, that women were fighting for. They were fighting for the ability to be in a public space. That's all to say that I think it's really interesting that we're talking about this with celebrities because they're so public and it's easy to talk about it that way. But there are women who are pushing boundaries all over the place and they tend to be shoved aside by society.
Definitely. Yeah, I think about celebrity culture and how this is our lens right now. there is more information than ever before, which, you know, intellectually, we might be able to argue, well, that means there's more room for more things, right? There's more room for people to be different than ever before. That being said, there's also more room for normalization, for the mommy bloggers, for us to see all the photoshopped models all over the place and that mass culture of celebrity and internet fame. It's just a totally different set of norms that are being foisted upon us. But all of it comes down to women being too something according to the time and place where they live.
I'm going to tell you a little story about being too hairy.
Please do.
So without giving away too terribly much, my husband works in advertising. And every once in a while, he gets these pictures that he has to, quote unquote, touch up. And one of the ones he has to do a lot are hair models. Think like those salon hair models with like the hair trailing down their backs or whatever. Their hair is real, but he comes home and he's like, they have hair all over their face. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, no, literally, in order to have the hair that beautiful, you have to have hair everywhere else. He's like, I cannot even tell you how many mustaches I've had to paint out.
That makes so much sense, actually.
Right?
It does. It totally does.
And so if you see the pictures of these women before they're photoshopped, they're beautiful. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, they're beautiful women, but they're not perfect.
Right.
But this images you end up seeing in magazines, you know, even in commercials, a lot of stuff gets doctored in post. Because we are plugged in 24/7, there's more of an opportunity to see these manufactured pictures than ever before.
Right.
And take them as real, not just somebody trying to sell me something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, like, celebrities are trying to sell you something. They're trying to sell you a certain kind of lifestyle.
Absolutely.
So which chapter are you looking most forward to reading?
Well,
maybe we should tell our listeners which women they can expect to read about.
Right. Okay. So here are the chapters in no particular order. And there are 10 of them. So Serena Williams, Kim Kardashian. That might be the one I'm really excited about. Let me be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa McCarthy, Lena Dunham, which I'm also excited about because I have written about Lena. Nicki Minaj, Abby Jacobson, and Ilana Glazer from Broad City. Hillary Rodham Clinton, Caitlyn Jenner, Jennifer Weiner, and Madonna. So those are the 10 chapters.
So which one are you most excited to read about?
It's really, I loved the Serena Williams chapter so much. For reasons that maybe I'll get into in a minute. But I'm really looking forward to the Kim chapter. I love Broad City so much. I cannot wait to hear what she has to say about Abby and Ilana. Caitlin.
Oh, I think that one's going to be fascinating. And I wonder how well it's aged.
Right.
This book came out. Obviously, she wrote it right after the election. Like, it's a new book. But Caitlyn Jenner is a fascinating person, but also has sort of moved into kind of the crap list.
Yes. She's made some enemies, that is for sure. So, you're right. I'm curious about how well that one holds up. These are all very context-specific people. I mean, even as I'm reading it already, I'm like, oh, she doesn't talk about Serena getting pregnant because that hadn't happened yet by the time, or we didn't know that it had happened by the time she was writing this book. So that's the thing about book publishing, guys. It takes a long time to publish a book, so sometimes we're, like, behind on things. But, yeah, so I'm, so far, I'm, like, enthralled by everything, but those are probably the ones I'm most excited to read about.
I cannot wait for Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
I love Madonna so much. Like, I love every phase of Madonna. I would probably sell a body part to go to a Madonna concert. Like, I'm super excited to read her chapter. And her title is Too Old.
Right.
Like, the older I get, the more fascinated I am with that. So the Serena Williams chapter, you know, not to get too in the weeds, but that was one of the things that I was like, hey, I wish she'd talk about this a little more. In terms of professional athletes, Serena Williams is old.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, she's really up there. I think she's, what, 36?
Mm-hmm. And Venus is, like, 38.
Yeah. I mean, those are insane ages to be competing the way that they do. Insanely amazing. But yeah, you're right. It doesn't really come up. I think she starts with Serena because the conversation can't avoid the topic of race, and it shouldn't. Because something that she's going to bring up over and over again is that race makes this harder for women, right? Like, you can do a lot of things right, but then if you happen to live in a black body, people are going to treat you differently.
Or any sort of non-white body, yes. I would
say.
Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, no, I can tell already that is part of Van Halen's thesis, that box is a white box. It's heteronormative. Mm-hmm. It's white. It's straight. It's small, quiet. That's the box.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. And of course, we'll be talking about feminism. And like, we're talking about feminism broadly, but feminism is like, I don't know, ice cream. All, if it's milk and frozen and has sugar, it's ice cream, but there are like a million subtypes of it.
I did not know where you were going with that, but I approve.
I feel like this holds water. Like, there, you can go to 31 flavors, right? Or Baskin Robbins or whatever the kids are calling it now. BR. There are all these subsets of it.
Yes.
Right? And it's not just like ice cream. You can get like ice custard or Froyo or Halo Top.
Right.
But they all fall under the same category. That's what feminism is. Right? Feminism is ice cream.
Yeah.
And then there are all these flavors of it.
Yes. That is a very good way to put it. 31 flavors of feminism. Maybe more.
We need a t-shirt. 31 flavors of feminism. People be like, what are you talking about? We like, it's like ice cream.
There have been several waves of feminism. And even within those waves, there are like many waves. So like the conversation on race, you know, conversation on sexism, feminism, there are lots of standpoints. And it's a discursive conversation, meaning there are lots of ways to argue about it, and we should continue arguing about it because it keeps the subject front of mind. So once again, people don't necessarily have to agree on every stance within feminism and what feminism looks like. And there are definitely people that call themselves feminists that I'm like, oh girl, you are not a feminist. but that is my right, and they would probably say the same thing about me. So this book is hopefully going to open up that conversation for us and help us kind of do some self-reflection, some self-examination. Mm-hmm. Like, why do we respond in certain ways to certain women? Like, mm-hmm. why do they make us nervous? Or why do they intrigue us? Asking those questions might reveal a lot about ourselves.
There's only one question that I really hope this book answers for me.
What is that?
Why Gwyneth Paltrow?
Cut. We're done. Yeah. No, I still don't know what you're trying to say. I do.
Like, she marketed a jade egg that you shove up your hoo-ha, and people bought it.
I don't know the absolute answer, but it probably has a lot to do with that box because she fits really nicely into it.
Jade egg up your hoo-ha. There's no reasonable woman that would do that.
I mean, if you have done it and you have something to say about it, at me, because I want to hear.
Oh, my word. Hold on. I think we got to talk to our dudes for a second. Dudes?
Yes.
Come back.
Yes.
Come back to us right now. We love you. We want you to know that.
I think it's important for our male listeners to know that we value their opinions, mm-hmm. and that their voices matter, mm-hmm. in this conversation. I think sometimes men shut down when it comes to talking about this stuff because they worry about saying the wrong thing. And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't think much can be accomplished if questions aren't asked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you have an opinion and I disagree with it, but like, we're all grownups here. So we want you to be involved. We want you to feel like you have a right to contribute because you do. And also, if you become a contributor, that means you are actively hoping to be part of the conversation, which means you are really, really on our side.
Mm-hmm. And you can be feminist too.
Not to put you on the spot, Maria, but like, what would be your simplest definition of feminism?
I would say feminism is any intellectual push or policy push.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, you know, I came down hard on mommy bloggers, but you can be feminist and want to have that kind of life, right?
Sure.
Like feminism at its heart is basically about women having the autonomy to make decisions for themselves and to live the sort of lives that they want. Now, what that can be a trophy wife, that can be marrying a roller coaster in France. Feminism is all about giving you the rights and empowering you to make decisions that are right for you as a woman and to not have those things dictated to you by larger social forces. Anyone who's pushing toward that goal, from whatever side that comes from, that is fine by me. How would you define feminism, Pixie? That was a long answer to a short question.
No, I think it was really good. It would be really similar. I think it would just be saying feminism is women fighting for equal rights and opportunities. Mm-hmm. I think what's commonly misunderstood about feminism is either women or men think that that means that those rights and opportunities come at the expense of men.
Yeah.
Which is not the point. Mm-mm. It comes from the viewpoint that there's room for everyone to do what they want to do, to be who they want to be and accomplish what they want to accomplish. I don't see feminism as cannibalizing anyone.
No. I think that's the thing people don't understand about it, is that at its heart, feminism is good for men too. Feminism is going to fight against systems that oppress men as well. So for example, the idea that men shouldn't stay home and take care of their kids. True feminism fights against that stigma because it's about equality for everyone.
The thing that gets lost is, or the reason why there is infighting is because people have different ideas of how to accomplish that goal.
Exactly.
Like the goal is probably the same. They just don't think that the other person is going about it the right mm-hmm. way. So it's going to happen. Like these arguments are going to take place. And they probably can't be avoided. And they shouldn't be avoided because ultimately I think people learn from them.
I agree. So feminism is complicated.
And you and I would know that because I'm pretty sure we took an entire graduate course on it.
Oh, we did take that one together. I'd forgotten. We took an entire graduate level seminar on feminism. And there were some crazy ass people in that class.
Yes, there were. But we respected them.
Mostly.
And they're crazy ass opinions. As you're reading or as you're just listening this week, think about what your two is. What is your two? Mm-hmm. Maria says she's two.
I said aggressive. I'm going to think about it, though.
I have a lot, so it would be hard for me to narrow down. Which one?
If you're a man, I think you can tell us if you're two something as well. Right? Because men have a box, too. It's just that we're not talking about it in this book.
There are some different standards that men feel like they have to hold up.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, absolutely. What's your two, guys? Let us know.
Yep. And so that is going to be our first question in our Instagram questions next week. I think that would be a perfect one to start off with.
Agreed. So, well, I think that's it, guys.
Yeah. This was a very passionate episode.
I agree. I think we had a lot to say.
I'm proud of our self-control when it came to talking about grad school, because we can have a whole separate podcast.
That's true. If you guys had sensed from the beginning that we had some sort of like bitterness or resentment buried deep within us, that's where it comes from. Like it comes from all these years of being in academia and feeling like fish out of water.
And the fact that my parents never bought me a pony. I have two wells of resentment. They're right by my ovaries.
Stop it. Oh my gosh.
We know we're at the end because we've lost it.
Thank you guys for hanging in with us. I hope you're reading along.
Me too.
If you haven't bought the book, I really recommend you do it. It's super good, and it's not taking me long to read at all. It's pretty quick.
And you can talk about it at Thanksgiving with your families.
Oh, yeah. This is another good table conversation
starter. Misfit Book Club, bringing families together since 2017. Don't talk about this with your family.
Yeah, my brother-in-law's meemaw will love conversations about women being too slutty. That'll be right up her alley.
I'd pay money to see that.
Well, you guys, thanks for rating us on iTunes. Lately, we've got enough ratings now that we actually have a rating. So that's awesome. Thank you. If you aren't listening to us on iTunes, please do. Or go to Google Play or Stitcher Radio. We're also available there. And we appreciate all those reviews and subscriptions. So thank you.
Pixie, maybe you're too demanding.
I might be too demanding. That's definitely one of my many twos.
Also, don't forget to tell people about us. If you're enjoying the podcast, make sure to spread the word because we rely on you guys to get the word out about us. And you can follow us on social media. We're super active on social. You can find us at Twitter at Misfit Book Club, at Instagram at Misfit Book Club, on Facebook at Misfit Book Club Podcast, or you can always email us at misfitbookclubpodcast@gmail.com.
I must give you props, Maria, for some really amazing Instagrams lately. You can also join us on Goodreads. Just search for Misfit Book Club. And Maria set up some really good conversation starters there. Mm-hmm. And she's going to start with some Instagram questions pretty soon. Number one being, what is your two? Mm-hmm. We want to know what it is.
Also, does your uterus wander around your body when you get hysterical?
What does that feel like? All right, guys, I think we've officially gone off the deep end. We should call it a night.
All right. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening.
Bye. See ya.